Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Fellow de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
DonColt.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Bus people, all happy. Thank you, bus people, thank you. The reason they're all happy is because it is gorgeous weather here in Florida right now. Although it is gorgeous weather, my daughter is always quick to point out to me that this time of year is usually gorgeous weather everywhere in the country. She says, I don't get to really brag until it comes to like January or something like that, when then I can say it's gorgeous weather in Florida and everybody else is buried under snow. So, but we are having gorgeous weather right now. Excuse me. Got a great guest on tonight. Great guest schedule. Mike's not with us. I thought he's going to join us, but he's still having computer hookup problems. He moved, if you heard the show last week, he moved over from, actually from Tampa to Orlando, or right outside of Orlando, and he is not hooked up. He's not online yet and all that. He was going to call in if he got a chance, but he hasn't had an opportunity yet, I guess. He may or may not join us, but we've got ourselves a great show tonight. Our guest is going to be Jenny from the winery at LaGrange, which is in Virginia. Before I go get her, though, something I'm going to share with you. This, very timely, I saw this on the internet, like I've mentioned many times. I got all sorts of different things that I subscribe to and all that. This particular chart here tells you what type of wine, beer, and booze that go with certain Halloween candy. I'll run through this list quickly here. And if you're listening to this on archives, you can check it out and slow it down and find out what is the right beer or wine or booze to go with your Halloween candy. And these are all broken down to different candies. Let me start out with candy corn. It is suggested Chardonnay. And my engineer says, oh my gosh, no, that would not fit. But, you know, hey, I don't make the rules. Beer, And booze, I'm not going to get into those because this is all about wine, so I'm not going to talk those. If you want to know those, email me. I'll tell you what they suggest. But, again, it's tongue-in-cheek, so no big deal. Candy corn, Chardonnay. Smarties, you know, those little small round things, it suggests Muscat. Reese's, now that Reese's Pieces, but there's actual cups, Cabernet Sauvignon. Twizzlers, Champagne. Snickers suggested Zinfandel. Sour Patch, and if you're not familiar with those, I don't know if that's natural distribution, but Sour Patch, little small sour drops. Prosecco, which is, again, a sparkling, bubbly wine. Kit Kat, Merlot. Twix, and this is a surprising one. Twix is a Malbec. Skittles, Riesling. M&M's, Syrah, or Syrahs. Tootsie Roll, these are mini Tootsie Rolls now, not the big ones. They suggest a boxed wine. Ooh, sounds like they have an issue with Tootsie Rolls. Butterfinger, pull out a sherry. And Hershey Bar, they suggest a port. So there you go. It gives you the proper wines to have with your Halloween candy. So once the kids come back in, you check the cabinet, what you are out drinking, and say, okay, I need all of your, and that way you have the perfect match. We've got a guest tonight. I'm really looking forward to this. The winery at LaGrange in Virginia is haunted. It's very haunted. It's been haunted for years. Our guest is going to be Jenny. She is the events coordinator there. I'm going to play some background jazz for you again, like I always do, since Mike's not here to make the phone call. And I'm going to go get Jenny. I will be back in less than a couple of minutes. So enjoy the music. I'll be back with you soon.
Hello.
Got Jenny standing in the back, and see, I remembered to turn off the music this time. I got Jenny standing by in the green room. We're going to get her out here and get her on. So, hello, Jenny. Welcome to All About Wine. Great to have you on tonight.
Yeah, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much for giving me, as a representative of LaGrange, the opportunity to be on the show.
Yeah, it's I was suggested by one of my customers that came in the middle of the summer, I believe it was, and I was telling them about last year doing a program about ghosts, and they go, oh, there's a winery in Virginia that is haunted. You need to call them. And that's how I found out about you, and I've been keeping the note floating around all the time, and that's when I called you. First,
we are quite infamous for the ghosts. That's very true. Hopefully our wine is something that sets us apart, but definitely people remember the ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the day before Halloween, so that's one of the things. But we're going to start out talking about the wine here at LaGrange. There's a big history behind it, and tell us in a nutshell how it came about.
So, the historic site, the winery at LaGrange, was built in the 1790s by a man named Benoni Harrison. and his wife, Catherine Harrison. The Harrisons are a very prominent family, or were a very prominent family, in Virginia at the time. The original estate was on over 200 acres, and they built this little manor house. You know, for the time, it was actually pretty large. It has several parlor rooms, and the decrepit kind of rundown estate was purchased almost 10 years ago by a group of investors who just saw the potential to really make it into something special. And what it is now is the oldest operating winery in Prince William County, and the only winery and vineyards in Prince William County, which for Virginia is pretty unique. We're about less than an hour, maybe 45, 50 minutes outside of D.C., right off of 66. And we have vineyards and operating, fully functioning winery, and lots of award-winning wines. So, but, you know, the manor house is just so gorgeous and so beautiful that I always say that I feel so privileged to work there. And it's really great that the estate was purchased by a business so that everyone can enjoy this historic property.
Well, the on your website, you have a picture of this great big beautiful brick house, three stories it looks like, and all that. Is the winery located in that, or do you have a separate building that you've do operations?
We do have that's most of our kind of parlor rooms, and we have the original cellar downstairs in the basement for people to sit in, and that's where we have our tasting room. We have a backyard bar located off of that. We do most of our kind of just events and hosting people there for daily visits in that main estate house, but we have to have a separate production facility to kind of do our winemaking. We produce a lot of wine out of a really small facility, so when people know how much we produce and we have a giant wine club, it's kind of amazing to see what we do out of a very small winemaking facility. Our winemaker, Fletcher Henderson, is just a really talented winemaker, and he makes some really brilliant wines out of there.
Well, since you mentioned the wines...
It's also open to the public. Our winemaking facility is also open to the public. We've got a beautiful barrel room as well that people are welcome to come and enjoy a glass or a bottle of wine daily at noon. We open every single day at noon. I think we're only closed something like 3 or 4 days a year, you know, Christmas, New Year's, those kind of things.
All right. What time do you close of the evening?
Monday through Thursday, we close at 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday, we close at 8, and on Sundays at 7 p.m.
Wow, so you're open quite late. Wow. Do you have winter hours that change?
A lot of wineries do have winter hours. We keep our hours pretty much the same. We want people to know that we're always there to visit with. And we have a really big local community as well, so we're a great place for people to stop by on the weekdays when it's a little bit slower to have a meeting, a business meeting. It's a great place to bring friends out for lunch. All that kind of stuff. And it's, like I said, it's the beautiful grounds there, and the historic estate just really lends itself to wanting to relax and unwind. We're right at the foothills of the Bull Run Mountain here in Virginia, and it's a gorgeous setting, especially in fall. At this time of year, it's beautiful.
Well, I can imagine it would be. You mentioned wines 3 or 4 times. Let's talk about what wines you all have and what ones you make there. I was looking at your website, and you've got some exciting wines there. Quickly, let's go through them. The Chardonnay.
Our Chardonnay is a non-malolactic Chardonnay, meaning that it doesn't have that buttery, creamy kind of a Chardonnay flavor. It is aged in oak, but it's more of a neutral oaking process, so it tastes more similar to an oak Chardonnay. We have our Cuvée, which is our most popular white blend, and that's just an easy drinking kind of a white blend. And then our reds, you know, I'm a big red drinker, so really standout reds are our Meritage. I'm actually enjoying a glass right now. I hope that's allowed.
Yeah.
We have a fan. Oh, good. It seems like that kind of a show. We have a fantastic Meritage Bordeaux-style blend that has been an award winner. It won the silver medal from the San Diego International Wine Competition.
Wow,
we're very proud about that. We have fantastic Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Franc Reserve. One of our most notable wines is our General's Battlefield, and that is our reserve option. It's actually aged in oak made from the Manassas Battlefield oak. It's a really special wine, fantastic blend, and it's actually a very noticeable bottle. It comes in a bottle that is the same milliliter, 750. However, it is shaped a little bit differently. It's what is called a Jenny bottle. So that really, I enjoy that.
I imagine you would.
Being a Jenny, it's apparently a historically accurate shape of a wine bottle from the Civil War period. So people always recognize that one. It's a great gift bottle. We also have a fantastic estate grown rosé, which we just sold out of. I might have squirreled a few bottles away, but we also have a fantastic Pinot Gris as well.
I noticed you make a Norton. That's
yes, definitely.
I mean, Norton is you think more of Missouri and Arkansas and that area there instead of, you know, way east in Virginia.
Well, you know, it is the state grape of Missouri, but I believe that Norton actually started in Virginia. And
really?
I believe so. Of course, you know, the fact checkers are going to be out there, so I hope that someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Norton did start in Virginia by a man named Dr. Daniel Norton, who was able to make this plant fruit-producing, and that somehow throughout the years, or maybe even Prohibition, it just kind of went unnoticed, might have been pulled up, and that it was found growing in Missouri, and they were able to repopulate the Norton population with that varietal.
Yeah, it's just, I love a Norton. A well-made Norton is really very difficult to beat. I just really do enjoy them. A dry Norton.
I love it.
Tasted some sweet Nortons, and I was rather disappointed. So,
that's
Cabernet
the thing, where
Franc,
they taste... Yes. Well, when the Nortons taste a little bit grape juicy or Welch-y, I don't like it either, but a nice dry Norton, and that's what our Norton, our 2011 Norton was like. It was very nice and dry and had that like baking spice, nice warmth to it. And I feel like Norton is very polarizing. People, you either love it fanatically or some people just hate it.
Yeah. Well, that goes with everything. Cabernet Franc. Too bad you're so. I love a Cabernet Franc. That is one of my favorite wines, and I notice you're sold out. Do you do it every year?
We're not sold out. Our website is not current. We do have. We're about to release our 2013 Classic Cab Franc, and we do still have our 2012 Cab Franc Reserve available for sale, which is also just fantastic. It's drinking amazingly right now.
Yeah, I do love a Cab Franc. Let's see, what else you have? Non-vintage snort, is that what you call your port?
That is what we call our port.
Okay.
And we make that out of our Solera system. It's non-vintage because we mix the different years. We actually have something very special that we've released here in the past couple weeks, which is a single vintage port style wine. It's from our oldest barrels, the 2008 barrels. And it is to die for. So people should definitely come out and check that out. If they like those port style wines, the thing that I really enjoy about our port style wine is that it is not. Sometimes ports can be very heavy, and you know I enjoy those as well. There's a time and a place for it. But our port style wine is very light bodied, but still has a real richness and depth of flavor that is very, very nice.
Sounds good. Sounds very good. I have to ask, where did you come up with the name Snort?
You know, I actually don't even know where the name Snort came from. It is a funny name, though. It could be from our neighbors down the farm a little bit who have a pet pig. I honestly don't know. I believe that if it's not made in Portugal, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's not Portuguese, then you're not able to call it port. And so we had to create...
You had to create new names, and that's why I was rather curious. I've talked about it on my program in the past, that the new rules and regulations that you can't put them out as a port, and I've put out the challenge to my guests, not just the guests, but to the listeners, that if you can think of something we can call port and sherry, let me know. Give me suggestions for new names, and I've gotten a few, but snort is... Never been mentioned.
Well, I don't think we've trademarked that one, so if anybody else would like to copy that one.
Yeah, there's I've heard quite a few different ones, but never snort. So
I always like to suggest that people have a snifter of snort.
Yeah, there you go.
So well.
Snort. I'll have to remember that. Let's see. One other here. The tenet?
Oh, yes. You know, we don't currently have, we released our 2012 Tannat to our wine club members. A lot of people, I'm sure you know of Tannat, it's, you know, traditionally been more of a blending grape. We make a 100% Tannat that is just, I mean, amazing. It's just really nice. We are selling our 2010 to our wine club members currently. That one is just beautiful. It's drinking superbly now. We pre-released it to them a couple months ago, and we even suggested, you know, it's drinking great now, but hold on to it. If you can, put it in the cellar, forget about it for a little while, you know. Me, I don't have a cellar, but I've got a rack and, you know, a couple of hidden places where I like to put things to try to forget about them for a while, but it just ages beautiful. And I like to say that it's, you know, it's one of those rich, dry kind of reds that it's similar to like a Malbec. People who like those kind of big, bold ones really enjoy our Tannat.
Do you grow that on your estate there?
No, we don't grow that on our estate. We have three varietals that we grow on our estate, the most prominent being our Cabernet Sauvignon. We also have Petit Verdot and Petit Mensang on our estate. A lot of our grapes we get from in-state, other wineries, and then we also get them from California. We got a few Washington State grape deliveries this past harvest season, which we're still working on. It was a really, really big crush and harvest season for us this time around. But some Washington State grapes, and I think next year we're expanding to some South American grapes as well.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, with all the wineries that are opening up in Virginia, it's getting really difficult to kind of keep, you know, grape prices reasonable. And, you know, there's so much demand, and there's, you know, there's only so many places growing grapes that it's getting really difficult and very competitive. We're lucky to be an older winery, about 8 years now, where we do still have some of those older contracts with, you know, producers, but they're going to start to expire. So we're kind of trying to think outside the box.
Yeah, that's always nice to, you know, be in with people so you can keep that going. How many wineries are in Virginia? And do you know now?
You know, every day more are opening. It's upward of 250, if not more at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just more and more every day. And a lot of places, you know, there's wineries that don't even grow on site. We're lucky that we do have our own grapes to work with, but we've got a great winemaker who really likes to just explore and experiment and really kind of make just amazing wines. Like our Pinot Gris from last year, it was a single vineyard varietal. It all came from the Tollgate Vineyards, and it was just the most beautiful Pinot Gris I've ever had. And so it's really nice that we are able to do that, get the whole grapes, really control the process, and he loves doing that.
I noticed here also it says wines available exclusively for the international market. What is your international market?
It's interesting you should say that. So no, not at all. much further away. So we don't ship our wines. It's all done right out of our winery. We don't even have them on menus or in little wine shops near here. But we do make wines, not exactly our exact wines that we serve to our market right here, but we do make wines that we ship to China.
Wow.
You know, they have a very different wine palette, and we ship to them. Generally, it's a little bit of a sweeter wine than we would make for our public here. Not to say we don't have sweet wines, just that they enjoy a lot more of a much more sugary kind of wine. And we export it.
You saying that, though, and I'm looking at right here in front of me, and it says red blend, and it says red wine, and it says Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon, and Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon, and then you're telling me sweeter style wines. That made me shiver.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, our sweeter wines generally sell a lot more. And we also make a sangria. And right now we're making our mulled wine, which is fantastic. We actually make that with a dry house wine and then blend that with all natural apple cider, a little bit of cranberry juice, and the mulling spices. And the apple cider tends to make it a bit sweeter. Those are very popular. You know, there are a lot of people who come to us with their wine drinky friends and, you know, want something that's easy sipping, you know, something if their palate, I hate to say this because we all have the people and their families and friends who only like sweet, but they are our biggest sellers.
Yeah. With you know, believe me, I know. First question people say, what is your sweetest wines? You know, and I said, well, we can add sugar to anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, it just seems to be American taste tends to lean toward the sweeter styles there. Do you use stainless steel or oak or plastic or what is your?
We do have Hungarian oak, American oak, French oak. We also have stainless steel. That's what we make our cuvée in. We use a lot of different processes just to kind of keep it different. You know, every wine is different. We're not going to, I mean, not that you wouldn't, but, you know, every wine is different. Our cuvée we make in a stainless steel, and that lends it to be a lot crisper, a lot, you know. It's just very fruity, really. It's got sweetness to it. It's about 1.2, a little bit less residual sugar. So, you get that fruity sweetness. It's a stainless steel one. You know, our Chardonnay, it's a neutral oaking process. So while it is aged in oak, it tastes a lot more like an un-oaked Chardonnay. And then our reds, we like to oak our reds. That's how we do it.
Yeah, well, the reds that you have there, they almost cry for being oaked. I mean, it just...
Definitely.
You know, I mean, I'm looking at these different ones, the Norton, Cabernet Franc, and that just, you know, a nice oaky Cabernet. I just keep going back to that. I'm going to have to go up and visit my brother in Baltimore and come down and visit you guys and get a Cabernet.
Oh, we're not far from Baltimore. Yeah, definitely. Come on out.
Yeah, definitely have to do that. I usually ask a bunch of questions whenever I talk to a winery. I'm going to ask just a few here, just, you know, get some the basic information. Then we're going to talk about the haunted the adventures that you all have there, but the soil in Virginia there. What type of soil is?
We should have had a two part segment. One starting with the real knowledge base, and the second part starts with me. You know, I'm not the best person to ask about the soil. We actually host a Smithsonian geology group every year that comes out. Yes, just because they've tested the soil in this area. And apparently, right where we are, just has some of the best soil for winemaking. And they come to us every single year. They bring about 30 or 40 geologists just to try our wines and walk our grounds and talk to our winemaker about the soil, take some samples, that kind of stuff. It's hard for me to kind of give you more in-depth about our soil here in Virginia.
I tell you what I would like to do. I won't press you for the soil. I really would like to get a name or a number or an email for somebody in that group that might talk to me about wine soil.
Definitely. Or maybe you could. I mean, we would love to have another opportunity to come on the show and talk more in depth about our wines and our winemaking process and all that sort of stuff as well, if you were interested in doing that. But definitely our winemaker, who I said his name, Fletcher Henderson, would be a great person to email and contact about his winemaking process and and the soil here and all of that, for sure.
Well, great. I will email you off the program, and you can give me his contact information and everything else. And,
definitely. I thought about stating it over the air, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. we don't want him to get flooded with emails and stuff. So.
Especially so right now at the end of crush season.
Yeah, really. I'm sure he's really quite busy. I just finished all that stuff. I'm in the process of doing some bottling now. So.
Definitely. That's a good feeling when you finish a successful season.
Yes. Yeah, when you get everything done, and, you know, and in fact, everything's finished, and I did a couple of bottlings already, and I've got four more to do over the next month. So I'm in good shape right now, though. But we will plan a second session with the winery at LaGrange to find out and talk about wines and stuff like that. I've been working my way through the country alphabetically. And I have not gotten to
the B. You finally made
it
to us.
Not yet. I got Utah. Then after Utah, I'm going to hit the V. But I do want to get you all back on, and I'll talk to Foster about the winery and what he uses and all that other stuff. It would be interesting. So we will definitely look at getting you on in a future date.
We would love that.
Yeah, but since this is the day before Halloween, and the winery at LaGrange is haunted, and you say you have lots of stories about haunted incidents going on there, I'm going to let you tell us stories.
Oh, I would love to. Should I just dive right into it?
Dive right in, yeah. I mean, you know, this is one of the things I say in the opening is sometimes we get off topic and then we talk about, you know, different things. This is one of the times we're going to get off, but this is the Halloween show, so dive right in.
Well, I mean, we are a perfect candidate for haunted. So the winery at LaGrange, it was haunted back before we owned it as a winery. It's built in the 1790s, as I stated earlier. And really we have, according to our ghost hunters, dozens, if not hundreds, of spirits on the property. You know, we were a hospital during the Civil War, a Union hospital during the Civil War. And so that lends itself to, it just feels like it should be haunted. it's scary stuff, but really I've never felt any sort of malevolent forces. I've never been one who reads too much into that sort of stuff, but basically anyone who's ever worked at LaGrange for more than a small amount of time has experienced something not unsettling, I would say, but strange and paranormal. Before we even purchased the estate, the group of investors who invested in the property, there were numerous sightings and just odd happenings by people who live in this community. We are, as a winery, located in the middle of a residential community, farms, that kind of stuff, several acre estates. But people, before it was owned by the winery, before it was restored, people would see lights in windows. And this was before we even had running electricity in the house. People would see lights in windows. A very common occurrence would be piano playing. People would hear the piano playing. And there hasn't been a piano in there for years. But that's, one of the most common ones was a family. When the estate was being renovated for the winery, there was a family who, a local family, and they wanted to see, get a sneak peek of what the renovations were looking like. And so they came up to the house early one evening, and the mother and father said, "Kids, you run around back and see if you can see anything through the window." And the parents were trying to look through the windows, and all of a sudden they hear piano playing. And they thought, they were a musical family, so they thought, oh, I guess the kids got in somehow and started playing the piano. And they go to the other side, and the kids are standing there. And they said, where did you guys find the piano? How did you get in? And the kids said, oh, we were just standing here the whole time. We didn't get in. We didn't hear anything. So really, and employees hear piano playing too. But not everyone all at once. Usually it's one person said, did you hear that? Can you hear that? recently.
Is there a background on that piano music?
In some old historical texts, there was mention of a piano being in one of the parlor rooms. So we know there was a piano in the estate at some point. I'm getting off topic here. There's just so many ghost things to talk about. But our main ghost is a man by the name of Benoni Harrison, who I mentioned earlier as the original owner and builder of the estate at LaGrange. When I first started working there, I thought, I wonder if he was Italian. What is this name? Benoni. It sounds so weird. And I did a little bit of research and found out that Benoni is actually a biblical variant of Benjamin.
Oh.
It is in the Bible, and it means son of sorrow is what it means. Oh. And there are many reasons why a boy of his time would be given the name Benoni. Either, you know, his mother died shortly after he was born, or he was born after his father died. We think that the reason Benoni is called Benoni is because he had a twin at birth who was only mentioned at birth and never again. So we think that maybe Benoni Harrison's twin passed away. But he is our main ghost at LaGrange. And early on at LaGrange, it was very, very, you know, everyone knew that it was haunted and strange things were going on. And so they invited several different ghost hunters to kind of come out, tour the property, do readings at night, and that sort of stuff. And one of our first ghost hunters told us that Benoni is the main ghost and that he would like recognition as to having built the estate and to name things after him and do things in his honor. So one of the things we do, it's funny, and it's extra funny because we named our wine club, our Benoni's Wine Club, Backyard Benoni Bar. We have Benoni's Red Wine Blend. We name lots of different things after him just to kind of do a shout out to him. But also at our main tasting bar, we have a mantel place where we like to put a glass of wine at the top of the mantel place every day in his honor, just as like a sort of spiritual offering to him. But today we actually, for the first time ever, took that wine glass down because of Halloween, just to see if strange things will happen. And it's actually happened before where we'll take the glass down just to see. I remember when I first started there, and it was around Halloween time, and I said, take the glass down, take the glass down. The man doing the tastings behind the bar took the glass down, and him and I both felt a sudden shift in the temperature. It got 20 degrees colder immediately. I am not even kidding you. You felt the shift. There was one time when I was doing tastings behind the bar and someone said, tell us the ghost stories, tell us the ghost stories. And so I started telling some ghost stories, and all of a sudden the chandelier right above us turned off.
Whoa.
And it's all new electrical. It's funny that these things happen when, you know, the electrical is brand new. The past couple of days, we've been having lights being turned on. Another common one is unlocked doors, where we had one door that for weeks we would come in and it would be unlocked. And so we installed a check. Someone come and check that this door is locked. I've locked this door, check it. And check it, sure enough, next morning it was open. It's since stopped, but another one of our ghosts is the little girl. She would have been a niece of Benoni. And her room is a room right above our tasting room. It's a parlor room where we do people sit in there. We decorate it for the holidays. There's a Christmas tree. The story with the little girl is that during the Civil War, she was in love with one of the soldiers, and every night she would put a candle in the window of her bedroom to let him know that it was safe to come up to the house to get food and water and whatever else she would have to give. Now, this little girl will not let anything be in front of that window. It's like the perfect spot for a Christmas tree, but every time we put a Christmas tree there, even if we tie it up, it gets knocked over. Nothing can go in front of that window.
Wow.
And people see the candle in that window. They have always seen the candle in that window, and that's another room where the lights will just turn on and off mysteriously. We also have, now I'm going to kick myself for telling you this. This is a secret. So in the room that I call the bridal suite, it's right above the original kitchen in the estate. It's where we kind of have a staff lounge area. And when we have brides and weddings at the winery, we use it as a bridal suite.
Right.
In that room, there is kind of the police imprint. Have you seen like those police sketches where someone's laying out and they draw it in chalk?
All right.
No. There is a mark on the ground where you can clearly, it's dark black, you can see someone's head and someone's arms and someone's legs lying there on the wood in this place. I'm told that when they restored the property, they tried to refinish it several times and could not get rid of this mark. And our current ghost hunters, the probe ghost hunting team, a woman named Darla, she told me that there's a man who bled to death in that spot. And he feels very bad about it, but that's where he died, and that's why the spot is there. And we keep that covered with a piece of furniture so that the brides don't see that when they're getting ready.
Yeah,
but if you come to LaGrange, one day.
Then did Bonini's death come as a tragic death, or was it just old age, or is there any documentation on how he died?
I can't say how he died. We do have a copy of his will. The really funny thing about Benoni is that him and his wife, Catherine, hated each other. Hated each other. And if you come to our estate, this historic house looks like several other historic houses in, the southern area of the East Coast. The only defining feature is the fact that on one side of the house, there are two fireplaces, two chimneys. On the first floor and on the second floor, Reason being that Benoni hated his wife so much that he had a second fireplace built so they wouldn't have to share the same hearth.
Oh, gee.
It's quite a funny story, but the reason being, and we have documentation on this from a letter from Catherine to her mother, the reason that they did not like each other there must have been several reasons, but one of the big things that we have documentation on is that they had a party at their house one day, Benoni and Catherine, and that, you know, Benoni was a man of small stature. Catherine was a large German lady, and he referred to her in front of all of their guests as a quote-unquote buxom lass, which she did. Quite an insult at the time, I assume.
Yeah, well, it would be now. I mean, would you want to be called that?
Buxom.
Buxom lass.
She didn't take kindly to that, and she took him over her knee and spanked him in front of all of their guests.
Oh.
And that is why he built the second fireplace.
Oh, I can understand that fully, yes.
They're actually buried a couple miles down the road on what used to be their property, and their headstones are right near each other, however, they're facing opposite directions. I haven't seen it because it's now on private property, but that's the story that I've been told, is that they're facing opposite directions. He had always promised that he was never going to let her have a gravestone either, but she did get one. We don't know if maybe it was a family member that put that up for her or not, but she did finally get a gravestone.
Last week, we had a guest on, Joy Neighbors, who does a blog, Joy's Joy of Wine. She also does a blog called The Grave Interest, and she goes to cemeteries and stuff like that. She's very, very big into that. And she said that a lot of these ghostal spirits met an untimely death or a harsh death or something, and that's why they're still hanging around. That's why I was asking if Benoni's death was documented, or if you knew.
I don't know how he died, but you know, it makes sense when you think of being a Civil War hospital for Union soldiers. You know, our ghost hunters took an image where they swear they can see a picture of a Civil War soldier carrying his sword, his bayonet, and whatnot, and the man who bled to death in that room right above the kitchen. It makes sense that his imprint is there, and that room is actually a place where staff does not like to go when it gets dark, because it just has this ominous feel to it. You go up there and it's a windy staircase, and it's just not a place that you really feel like hanging out, especially when you know that there's this body print on the ground. We had one woman come downstairs. She was up there retrieving something, and she ran down the stairs, and she said, something's up there. I don't like the feel. I could feel someone right behind me. I could tell that there was someone up there. She ran down the stairs, but nothing bad has ever happened, but sometimes you really just feel the presence, or you know, I locked that door. I turned off that light. I moved that box. How did that move back over there, you know? Yep. We actually had a painting. It was on a ledge. A couple of paintings on a ledge on the staircase, and they kept getting moved. One of the paintings in particular kept getting moved behind another painting, kept getting moved, and it would be like, who is doing? Is someone doing this? And so we would move it back out, and sure enough, the next day we would go and we would look, and it would have been moved again. We have no idea where that picture has since gone to. It eventually, after so many times of pushing it back, it's gone. Nobody is owning up to either moving it or putting it somewhere else. We can't find it. I guess they really did not like it there, you know.
Well, you said something earlier when you started to talk about the being haunted there. You said something that you really don't believe in it, but yet you're describing these different things. How, you know, do you believe now?
I mean, it's kind of hard not to. When is there energy there? It's fun to talk about, but having experienced these things myself, I'm more on the bandwagon, I guess, than a non-believer. And all of us will say that weird things happen, but you know, one of our other employees, Katie Lee, she's always like, "There's always a logical explanation. There's a logical explanation, always."
Asking where the picture is.
Mm-hmm. Or the ice machine gets unplugged. It was getting unplugged forever, and it became such a headache with the ice being all melted every day. And we just thought, is it too heavy? Is the electrical shock pulling it out? Is there an employee who's pulling it out? And I'm just like, it's the ghosts. It's kind of nice to have that it's the ghost excuse. No, I didn't turn the light off. It's the ghost.
Yeah, you mentioned things there. We've talked to haunted wineries. There's a Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri, just northeast of Kansas City, and they're haunted. And they mentioned things like that too, where they feel a chill, or they somebody's talking and there's nobody there, and different things. And Bully Hill Winery down here, well, actually, only about an hour from where I am now down here in Florida, they're haunted. Indian ghosts are always moving stuff and locking doors and lights and stuff. And it seems to be things that ghosts can do. I mean, they're not going to push you down the stairs, but they're going to, move a picture, or they're going to turn on a light or stuff like this, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The funny things happen every once in a while. We're a winery, so we'll lock the doors when it's closed, but we'll still be inside washing glasses, restocking wine. Not too long ago, a couple of months ago, we were inside doing that, and I'm just shutting down the computer, and we're all getting ready. It's dark outside to walk to our cars together, and all of a sudden you hear a thud upstairs. And one of the girls, and I'll tell you more about this girl because she actually lives right down the road from the winery and grew up less than a mile away. She hears this noise, and she runs to the door, which I, of course, have already locked, and she's trying to get out of there. And she says, you better let me out of here. I don't want to see the ghost. And I run over there, and I unlock it. And I said, okay, I'm going to unlock it. But she heard the noise, and she just was not having it. But the funny thing about this employee is she grew up right down the street, and she says that when she was a little girl, she believes that she saw the ghost of the little girl at LaGrange. This employee, her name is Michaela, her family has a little farm right up the road, and she says that one day she was riding her horse by the property before it was owned by the winery, and that she saw the little girl with, ringlets in her hair and a very typical dress for the time period, just walking up the hill as proud as you please, and she said she had no question in her mind that it was the ghost of the little girl walking up the hill.
Oh, that's cool. That really is. You said that it was a hospital. Are you? Do you find any activities or hauntings from patients that have died there, or anything, or is it just a basic few that you're seeing?
Well, we definitely think that the man upstairs in our staff lounge area was a soldier who did bleed to death there. It's hard to say it's hard to pinpoint which ghost is doing what. We definitely know that the little girl is the one who doesn't want anything in front of the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's hard to say which ghost is what when the strange things happen. If it's the soldier or one of the soldiers who passed away, it's kind of hard to pinpoint when you feel like you have so many ghosts. Is it Benoni? Is it, we always do like to say it's Benoni because we feel like we have a relationship with him. We'll say, hi, Benoni. Today when we removed his glass from the mantel place, I said, Benoni, we still love you. Don't be mad at us.
Yeah. He's going to be upset because you're moving his glass. I am sure that's going
to... Well, it's funny. We had one employee, and whenever the internet would go down, she would say, is Benoni's wine glass above the mantle? I swear he messes with the internet.
Do people come in to the winery knowing about the hauntings, or is it something that you tell them, or do you try to keep it a secret? Obviously, it's on your website. I see the
We don't try to keep it a secret. We don't try to scare anybody, of course. We wouldn't want, children are very curious about the ghosts. And we actually get a lot of tourists who just come by to see this historic estate, and because they've heard about the ghost stories, we have a lot of literature on our walls printed that they come to read. People who don't even want to drink wine, they just come to view the grounds and to view the estate. And then a lot of our customers just kind of love to hear the stories and love to tell people stories and show them the rooms and show them the two fireplaces. And they always want to hear the ghost stories about our estate.
And
so it's kind of a mix.
People do love to hear the ghost stories because I tell people when they come into the winery that, it's Halloween and we do interview different wineries, and when I tell them stories, and I'll tell them some of the stories that you just told me, I'll pass on to my customers off and on, and they love it. They love to hear this stuff. It's just something that people just really, really like to hear and like to talk about. But then I really wonder how they would act if they're standing there and their temperature drops 20 degrees.
I mean, I know. My office is on the third floor, and for some reason people are always scared of either that the staff lounge place above the original kitchen or our downstairs cellar, which is open to the public. It's the original cellar. People are always scared of those places. Me, I'm fine with those places. You won't see me in my office after 6 o'clock. If the sun starts to set, I'm leaving my office on the third floor. Lights off, out the door.
You're going to be leaving early starting next week. We got daylight saving time ending.
It's true. On those rare days when I actually make it up to the office. I don't know why. I just really don't. It's now the third floor. I guess sometime in the 30s and 40s, they converted it into bedrooms and a restroom up there, like a little bathroom, because it used to be a private estate. Some point they changed it into that. It used to just be the attic. And I don't know why. I really just don't like being in the attic. And it's a beautiful estate, but I just don't like it. Another story is that when they were refinishing the floors, they were up on the third floor where my office is, and they were redoing the floorboards, and one of them was up, and someone saw a locket under one of the floorboards, and he reached for it, and when he reached for it, it moved back. And so he went a little farther, and he reached for it again, and he moved back again. So under that floorboard, they were never able to retrieve the locket. Is still the locket under the floor that was just meant to stay there.
And there's someone there moving it too, and that's your office.
They did not want to let go of that locket. That was their locket, and they were keeping it there.
Wow, that's just, you know, it. All these things that you can't explain, and you know, it's fascinating. I enjoy that stuff. I really do.
I love it too. I'm interested to see what happens with this glass being removed. Apparently, you know, this is offering, and weird things have happened in the past when it's been removed. So who knows what we're in store for tomorrow.
That's true. And when I call you back and I talk to the winemaker Foster's, and when I...
It's Fletcher Henderson.
Fletcher? Okay, I'm sorry. When I talk to Fletcher, then if he doesn't know about the glass, we're going to have you be sure that he knows so he can tell us about the glass. So.
Oh, he'll definitely know about it. Fletcher was actually one of the original investors in the property.
Oh, is he?
Who brought it back to what it is now.
Oh, very good. Property, the whole area there, are there cemeteries on it?
Not on our property, actually. Now, like I said, we're in the middle of we are our winery estate, but we're in the middle of a private housing community, 10-acre-plus estates. So it's actually in the backyard of one of the homeowners in their farm area. They have the Harrison family cemetery, and that's where Benoni is buried and several other members of this family. Are buried in the little graveyard on this person's property. And I've seen it, but, you know, it's private property, and, you know, you don't really want to walk onto someone's estate. We might have to ask our neighbor one day if we're allowed on there to check it out.
Yeah. The reason I'm asking, you said it was a Civil War hospital. I'm sure there were deaths during the stays at the hospital. And
you're
you would think that there would be some sort of a cemetery around there
I know about the family cemetery. You know, I don't know about any sort of Civil War cemetery right there. But that's something to think about. You know, there is a very old little church down the road as well where there's a large cemetery. And it's, you know, less than a mile from us.
That might be the Civil War cemetery. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have to think, being where we are, that there must have been so many deaths also that, you know, we're right near so many battlefields that maybe not all of them were marked when it was, you know, just a soldier so-and-so. It makes you wonder.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just, you know, and especially in that area there, you would think that there would be lots of cemeteries around and lots of Civil War hauntings because of that.
Oh, definitely. Well, like I said, our ghost hunters, the probe team who comes out every once in a while and will stay throughout the night, they have got a picture, and they like to show this to our guests when they come and do the ghost stories for us, of what they can point out is a soldier. And she says, there he is standing there right in the stairwell of the cellar, and you can see his sword right there, or his bayonet or something. So she has names. She knows the name of the man who died in our staff area. She brings candy for the ghost. She says, Martha Ann, she loves peppermint. Please put this peppermint stick out for Martha Ann. I told her I would bring her candy. They're real characters. I mean, they're real characters.
And the question arises, is the peppermint gone in the morning?
Well, you know, it's so funny that you should say that, because she told me to put it in the staff lounge room. And she said, Jenny, you have to draw a line. You have to outline the peppermint stick. And if it moves, then you'll know that Martha Ann has touched her peppermint stick. Open it up. And she says, open it up for her, because you want to make it easy for the ghost to enjoy it. And so, but you know, it's our staff lounge area. So, of course, the next day when I think about it, I go up there and look at it. And it has, in fact, moved. But when it's a place, where 15 or so people on the weekend, 20 people on the weekend are keeping their coats and their bags and their whatnot, it's hard to say that someone didn't just move it, you know?
Right. Someone picked it up and looked at
it. But it did move.
Yeah. That's great.
The ghost hunters are definitely characters, and they love coming out and doing the tracking and meeting all the different spirits and all that sort of stuff. And she also has an audio clip where she says that they say her name. She says you can hear them say Darla, Darla, and so it's just it's crazy. You do get a little spooked when you talk to the ghost hunters, though. Let me tell you.
Oh yeah, that's. The Belvoir Winery I was telling you about had the Sci-Fi Channel Ghost Hunters out, and they actually had an episode on Sci-Fi Channel with the Ghost Hunters, and had some paranormal activity that they found. It was an old Civil War hospital at one time, and an orphanage, and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
God!
Three big buildings, and it was. One of them they were going to tear down, and so they brought the ghost hunters out to see what the ghosts would say, and they said that the ghosts aren't real thrilled about them tearing down one of the buildings, and that was the conclusion.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Ooh, I wonder if they tore it down. I wouldn't, you know, that's the thing. I don't want angry ghosts.
Yeah, absolutely right. Ghosts have had enough, but angry ghosts.
Casper.
Yeah,
I mean,
they just
so
sort
we
of,
say, I honestly think that some people, we have a lot of people who said, I looked at buying the estate, or I know so-and-so who used to live here, and that they had heard that there were, you know, not nice spirits here. So in my mind, I like to think that they're happy because there's wine. I mean, wine really makes people happy.
And there you go. That's all it takes is just get wine. And if there are ghosts, that's just a happy extra, you know. And long as they're happy ghosts, too. Like you say, when they get to be unhappy ghosts, we start calling them names like poltergeist, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah. Definitely not a good thing. And, you know, it's funny, though, because everyone handles it differently. Like our employee who's terrified when she hears the sounds. It's an old house, and so the people who don't believe are easily like, oh, it's just the old house creaking. The people who do believe are, you know, running to get out of the door.
The eyes get big and the pulse mm-hmm. jumps up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing the ghost stories with us and telling us about the winery at LaGrange. I will definitely get a hold of Fletcher and see if we can't get him on sometime in the future here and talk about...
Once you make it to the V's.
Yeah, and once I'm, which is going to be reasonably soon. I mean, I'm finished Texas. I'm ready for Utah, but I dedicated this month to ghosts. So we're going to get back on track next month, hopefully. And but we always jump in and around with different things that come up and all that. So, but we'll definitely call you and talk to Fletcher and maybe get you back on again. And you can, if you remember more ghost stories or something like that, and fill us in.
Fantastic.
So.
Well, thank you so much for letting me share some of our stories.
Oh, thank you for taking the time out to join us tonight. It was really fantastic, and it was very enjoyable, and there was all sorts of neat information there. So we are really glad that you were able to take the time. And I noticed you didn't stay at the winery. You told me, call the winery, and then you said, no, call my cell number. So I would have to think that that was the fact that it was getting dark and you had to get out of the wine.
Well, my original plan was to sit outside and enjoy a glass of wine, but we had had really nice weather here the past few days, and then it got really, really cold today. So instead of sitting outside, I would have had to sit inside the winery alone, and I decided, you know, I'm brave, but I'm not that brave, and I don't want to be caught on air with a scoopy, with a scary situation.
You're brave but not stupid.
Out. Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'm going to go home.
Yeah, well, wiser heads prevail. That's good. Well, great. I am really glad you were able to join us tonight. It was very entertaining and fun. And I'll look forward to talking to the winery at LaGrange sometime in the future here.
Yeah, thank you so much. You have a great night. Okay.
You too now. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye now. All right. That was fun. Let's see. Mike always hits the applause. Here we go. Thank you, bus people. There you go. Good show. A lot of fun. Jenny had a lot of stories there. There we go back again, though. We talked about this last week, if you've heard last week's show. Talked about this last week about how you don't have any Indian ghosts on the East Coast. Most of them are on the West Coast. And this, here we got Civil War and stuff like that. So I don't know if anyone has information or theories about that. Or if you have ghost stories. I mentioned this last week. Nobody sent me any ghost stories or nobody sent me any information on ghosts. But if you have a ghost story or something, let me know. I'd love to get you on and or tell your story. You don't even have to come on there. I can just tell your story. So this weekend, the winery has a special event, PAWS, which stands for Pasco Animal Welfare Society. And Pasco is the county I'm in right now. This is where the winery is located, in Pasco County, Florida, which is just north of Tampa and St. Petersburg. But Pasco Animal Welfare Society is having an event this weekend, fundraiser, $20, which includes a glass, includes a tasting. There's going to be door prizes. Other proceeds will all go toward PAWS, and it's a great cause, great group of people, and we'll have vendors. We got some like 15 vendors that are going to be there selling all sorts of different things, and just a variety of stuff to entertain and amaze you. It's Saturday, so after you went through the harrowing evening of Halloween on Friday night with the kids coming around and all that, then come out and enjoy some wine, attend the PAWS fundraiser, help a good cause while you're at it, and just have a good time. It's supposed to be absolutely gorgeous here Saturday. Jenny just mentioned that it was getting cold there. The cold's hitting us by Saturday. They said we'll be lucky if we hit 70 Saturday. So it's going to be a little bit cooler that day, but still quite gorgeous. And we're looking forward to having just a sunshiny, bright day out there and a lot of fun and raising some money for a great cause and a great group of people. So mark your calendars this Saturday, November 1st. PAWS fundraiser at Florida State Winery. Public service announcement. Set your clocks back this Saturday. Back 1 hour. We, set your alarm clock for 2 o'clock in the morning. Get up, set it back to 1 o'clock, and go back to bed. You got it taken care of that way. And we're beyond undaylight saving time for the next 5 months. And the 1st of April, we go back to it again. So that hour you lost back in April this year and were exhausted all the way up now because you lost an hour, you're going to get it back Sunday night, or Saturday night, Sunday morning. So we're done for this week. Next week, I'm going to send out some emails to Utah wineries, and we're going to see if we can't start getting Utah into the mixture. That's going to be November the 6th. 2 weeks from 2 weeks, or a week from today, November the 6th, and we're looking at possibly getting some guests on from Utah, seeing what they're doing out there in Utah and how things are going. There's quite a few wineries in Utah. I was amazed at the number of wineries that are in Virginia. Jenny said that she thinks there's like 250. The site that I look at to check these always has a list of the wineries. And this shows, 200 and, let's see, what do we got here? 208, so 250, wow. So Utah, my list shows 8. I don't know if that's correct or not, but we'll find out. We'll get a hold of them. We'll find out what's going on. We'll get a winery on. We'll talk to them next week. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us. As always, we do appreciate it. If you have any questions, have any comments, anything, get a hold of us. All About Wine, BTR, .com. Am I saying that right? I'm asking my engineer here. I'm always confuse my Facebook with my email. AllAboutWineBTR.com is our website. You can email us at allaboutwine101@gmail.com or Facebook us. So any of those, Facebook/AllAboutWine. Any of those ways you can get in touch with us, or you can go to the winery site. I'll hear from you that way too. So, again, thanks for tuning in this week. Again, thanks, Jenny, for taking the time out to join us. It was very enjoyable, a great show, and learning some stuff about Virginia and some of the wineries and stuff like that. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you all next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR or visit our website at AllAboutWineBTR.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/AllAboutWine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.